Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello and welcome. This is Carl Nordgren. You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill, the best radio station in North Carolina. I'm so proud to say that and so happy to be here in their offices, in their studio. These are great folks here at this radio station. So thanks for joining. I'm happy that you're here. This is the show that gives you lots of perspectives on what it means to be creative and what it means to be entrepreneurial. I'm not going to define it. If I define it, a definition limits one's understanding, right? And when the whole world is changing all around us all the time, how can a fixed definition of creativity be of much value? So I'm going to give you lots of prompts, lots of insights, lots of behaviors, and you can craft your own understanding of what it means to be creative. Last week, we started talking about it as if you were building your creative and entrepreneurial toolbox. And we talked about how important it is to have generosity in that creative toolbox, because being generous is being generative. They're the same words, basically, until you get to the end of them. Or the importance of humility. If you want to be curious, you want to wonder about what's out in the world, doesn't it seem right that you have to bring a humble spirit to that curiosity, right? If you think you already know, doesn't that interfere with, doesn't that blunt your curiosity? So we talked about how important that is. We talked about the power of both. I told you the turtle story about how two turtles did very opposite behavior so that one of them would survive. So you need both of those behaviors for the turtles to survive. Well, today I'm going to give you some more behaviors, some more prompts to put in your toolbox if you choose. And this is a very important one. I think the next couple are really important. What is the greatest gift we can give each other these days, I ask you? I think the greatest gift these days is to give somebody your undivided attention. To listen carefully with all the distractions that take place. If I'm in a workshop, live workshop right now, I'd be picking up my phone and pretending like it's distracted me, right? Give somebody your undivided attention. It's a gift. It's a wonderful gift. And people know when they've got your undivided attention, and they feel respected and they feel regarded. They feel seen when you give somebody your undivided attention. And don't just provide your attention. Listen generously. Listen appreciatively. Listen for the best of what this person is sharing with you. If it's an old idea or a new idea, just listen for the very best of what your friend, your colleague, your associate is sharing with you with an appreciative approach. And that makes it most likely, does it not, that when it's your turn now to say something, that you'll bring that appreciative vibe into what you have to say. You'll be speaking from that place of appreciation. Let me introduce the idea that debating is an important creative activity, right? That we share ideas with each other to try to find the best way to be thinking about this topic. And so the ones that we've already discussed, the topics we've already discussed, listening, boy, if you're going to be in a creative debate, a productive debate, listening to the other person is so very, very important. Listening appreciatively to the other person is so very, very important. What you want to be debating is the best of the other person's ideas, not the worst of their ideas, right? We can always find something wrong with everybody's ideas. Let's understand the best of their ideas, and let's have the conversation be about that. So listening closely and appreciating to what you're listening, and then bringing that close appreciation to discuss, to debate with your friends, your colleagues, your associate, what the best outcome is for this concept that we're talking about. So we'll shift here a little bit now, and this is very much on my mind. In my home in Durham, there is some of my family who lives in Weaverville, right outside Asheville. They were able to make it out on Sunday night, and they've been with us for a couple of days. Right now, as we speak, they're loading up a trailer with supplies to take back up the mountain, to share. They're going to provide. Let's talk about providing. Thanksgiving's not that far away. Let's talk about providing. I think Thanksgiving is such a great great celebration of our inclination to provide, right, to each other. And providing isn't just goods. Those are the examples I've been giving. I think one of the best things that you can provide to somebody else is access to you, access to the best of your thinking, access to your network, right? If you introduce somebody to some that they really need to meet, boy, they'll benefit from this introduction. They're providing, right? You're providing something really that's important to that individual, and there's going to be a creative dynamic that comes out of that. What I know is taking place up in the mountains right now is that sharing, that wonderful sharing that takes place when we are stressed and we see that the person next door to us is stressed, and we just have this natural inclination at that point to share, to bring our food, to bring our time to each other, so that we to bring our chainsaws again up there in the mountaintop. I've heard so many stories about, you know, a bunch of folks just clearing the neighborhood all by themselves, going out there with their chainsaws. They're sharing their effort, they're sharing their energy, and they're making their community a better place. I get so determined to make sure that folks don't conflate creativity with artistry, with artistic expression alone, that I sometimes give artistry, the minimal coverage. And so let's talk about some of that. Let's talk right now about painting. Of course, that's a wonderful creative activity, right, to be a painter. But what I want you to understand is that you have great visual skills that you may not know that you've got. And there's wonderful things that happen to your creative brain when you attempt to accomplish capture something visually, right, whether by painting, which I'm talking about, but also by pen and ink or chalk, whatever is your visual medium. There's great creative exercise that occurs regardless of the quality of your output. And there's some folks who say, you know, the difference between a famous artist, a famous painter, and me isn't their ability to draw a line. It's what they see, right? It's what they see the world in a way that maybe some of us don't see the world. Let's attempt to do that. Let's stay on painting for a minute and shift it over to creative processes. We're going to talk about the creative processes of Picasso and Cézanne and how very, very different those creative processes are. When we come back from the break, I hope you'll join us.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Right before the break, I introduced the two artists that we all know, Picasso and Cézanne, and I'm going to compare and contrast their creative processes as painters. And this is not outsiders' projections. This is reading Picasso's letters, reading Cézanne's letters, contemporaries in their letters write about their creative processes. And so here, let's start with Gold Pablo. He would not start a painting until he knew exactly what he was going to do, until he knew how he was going to complete it. He says, I don't discover, I complete, right? And certainly we're talking about the big, ambitious paintings here. And he would do a number of little notes, you know, little sketches, before he would take on the big, big canvas, the full canvas. But he was clear. He didn't start till he knew how he was going to finish this painting. On the other hand, Paul Cézanne, clearly again in his letters that he writes to friends and fellow painters, he lets the painting tell him what he wants to do. He just gets started. He just gets started, and the painting educates him about what he should be doing next. What's your style? What's your process? I'll bet you many of you have one or the other, and I'll bet maybe even more of you do a little bit of both, right? As a novelist, I was more like Cézanne, in that I have some idea about where I'm going to end up, but man, every page is a surprise. Every page is a surprise in my process of getting there. Back in the day when I was a more active entrepreneur, and especially when I was on the marketing side of my entrepreneurial gigs, I didn't kick off that marketing program or introduce it to people until I knew exactly what it was, right? I had to have everything just in place, just right before I would present the idea to anybody. So what is your creative process? Is it both? Is it a little bit of each? It's nice for us to be thinking about our processes so we can manage them more effectively. Another artistic creative activity is writing. Again, I mentioned I'm a novelist. I've also got a book on creativity called Exploring Your Creative Genius. And what's interesting about writing, folks, is that it is both a left and right hemisphere activity, left and right brain hemisphere activity. Right? There's the rational quality, right, to be able to take an idea, understand it well enough that you can structure a communication of it for others to comprehend, right? There's a rational quality. But now we want to also capture their imaginations as we're telling this story and captured in our writing. So it's wonderful that how writing plays to both hemispheres of our brains. You want your two hemispheres to be integrated when you can. It's also interesting to me how we are becoming less adept at writing, right? There's so much of our writing now is done in the technology shorthand that we're not writing fully. We're not expressing ourselves fully through our writing. And it's so important that we explore with pen in hand, not keyboarding onto a piece of technology, but with pen in hand, it's so important that we explore who we are in our writing, right? That we write about ourselves, write about our experiences, keep a journal and write about what you're seeing, what you're hearing, the problems that you're having, the problems that you keep having. Lots of research shows that by writing about it with a pen or pencil in your hand, your brain is more creative when you're holding a pen or a pencil in your hand. So when you write about your life, there is wonderful insight that you get. And maybe you don't want to write about your life. Maybe you want to write a short story. There's lots of research that shows that in your writing, you are, in fact, exploring your psyche, right? Maybe, again, some ghosts that you've had back there in your soul for some time, they come out in your writing, and that expression is going to be really useful for you. What a wonderful creative process. I like this one, caring. I sort of came to understand caring back in the days when my family lived on a little six-acre farmette. I call it a farmette. I can't call it a farm. Down there on 751 over where Stagecoach Road hit 751. And at the end, as it was the days where I was very much that hard type A entrepreneur. And at the end of a long day, man, I would go down to the barn and I would care for these animals. I would care for them. And when I cared for them, when I fed them, when I spoke to them, made sure they had water, when I brushed them, the act of caring, oh my gosh, did that care for me. It was the great refresh that I needed at the end of one of these days where we are debating and where we are creating and sharing. To be able to care was such a wonderful caring activity for me. It soothed me. It was wonderful. What you care for cares for you, and what you care for benefits, of course, from that care. So you're creating great. Are you helping it grow? Are you helping it understand itself better through your care? All of that is wonderful creative progress for your friend, your object. How about attempting? I was always interested when I was raising my three daughters when they were 3 and 4 years old. They'd attempt anything. You know, there was no sense that, oh, I might fail at this. They would attempt just about anything. Sometimes, of course, one has to be super careful. And when they're in a position of attempting things you may not want them to attempt. But boy, oh boy, where does that stop? Where does this notion that we're going to try anything, we're going to attempt anything, where does that stop? Does it stop when we get old enough that we don't like our friends laughing at us? Probably somewhere around there. But the act of attempting, of trying something that you don't know that you can do, but you are going to attempt it, what a boy, that is a great creative expression of who you are. And it can have great impact on people who are watching, right? Your attempt might not be a successful attempt, but the next time you attempt, it very well could be. And the people that are watching you will learn from your efforts. And that's also very important. How about singing? Let's go back to the creative, artistic combination. How about singing? Just sing, right? There's research that says, man, the more time you spend just singing aloud, it helps you, it increases your longevity. Just to give yourself permission to stand in a room and just sing at the top of your voice, whatever song you want to sing, research shows, has such a profound impact on who we are that it will actually be measurable in research that can be something that will help increase your longevity. We got a couple more for you. When you come back for the last segment, please join us.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius. This is the third and final segment of the show. Today, I have been talking with you, sharing with you more prompts and more behaviors that you can consider for your personal creative toolbox. I talked about listening, talked about painting. Maybe we should be saying drawing and painting. Now let's have a couple of more. Let's start with trust. Let's start with trust. Isn't the standard understanding of trust is that somebody has to earn your trust? When I participated in, well, it was a local company. Maybe some of you have heard about it, FGI. I had a role in merging an ad agency and a marketing research firm together to create a new FGI. And so much of it was successful. Boy, we were growing so fast. But the employees, the legacy employees from the two first companies, there was a lack of trust. Some of these folks were really very rational and logical. Some of these folks were really imaginative and enthusiastic. And they weren't quite working together as well as we would want them to. And so we engaged in a series of activities that included, wasn't just this, but included the idea that maybe we can just give each other our trust. Maybe we can just share it as a gift. And that urging was followed up by the idea that what do you do with a gift, right? When somebody gives you a gift, you want to take care of it. You want to respect it. You certainly want to receive it in a very gracious manner. So if somebody gives you their trust and you accept it in that fashion, have we accelerated the idea that, boy, we'll have to wait for enough events, enough experiences together without, oh, I guess I'll finally will trust you. Just give each other your trust. That's been my go-to for most of my adult life, if not all of it, right? I'm just going to grant my trust to the folks that I meet. Let's talk about restoring. Oh my gosh, restoring. That's such an important creative quality. I have just recently, maybe we first think about restoring as a thing, right? I'm going to restore this chest. I'm going to restore this house. And those are wonderful, very useful, very important, practical, creative expressions for sure to make something old new, to make something broken, operational. That's great restoring. But there's also relationship restoring. And I need to mention that because I had somebody who was really close in my family for 40 plus years that I just It was me at my worst, right? I just had something that I just wasn't going to cut this person any slack at all. And I just sort of dismissed this person from my life, part of my family. So I couldn't totally ignore this individual, but I did a pretty good job of dismissing this person from my life. And in the last 5-6 months, there's been this active effort on my part, met beautifully by the other individual's part, to restore a relationship, to build one up again, to make what was old, this disconnect between us, this serious disconnect. And I think I've said to you already, I want to make it really clear, this was my fault, this disconnect, to restore it and to now have a loving relationship where once there was, what, at best, just disinclination, right? Dismissal of each other. So restore that relationship, right? Make that relationship sing. We're going to go through some interesting future times in the future. I think we want our relationships to be as strong as they can possibly be. So let's talk about some exercises for you, some creative tips. These are ones I've shared with you before, but they're simple and they're powerful. You get big payoffs from these. The first is stare at the color green. Stare at the color green. My radio station here has done such a great job of respecting me. The notebook that I have, that they have waiting here for me with my notes for each show, is green. Stare at the color green for 30 seconds. Research out of the University of Munich discovered. If you stare at green for 30 seconds, your performance over a series of 4 creative exercises. So much research only identifies one activity that they're going to measure the results. They were super ambitious. They identified 4 very different creative exercises for the participants to engage in. And they tested blue, and they tested red, and they tested yellow, and they tested gray. None of those folks who stared at those colors had any change in their performance over these exercises. The folks that stared at the color green for 20 to 30 seconds had a 25% improvement in their creative performance over those exercises. 25%, as I said to my Duke students, or as I say to Carolina students now, doesn't that take your B minus to an A to have a 25% improvement? So go stare at the color. Why green? Look out the window. Wherever we are, the color of growth is green. Our eyes see more shades of green than any other color. We pick out green faster than any other color. So this is Carl Nordgren urging you to stare at green, urging you to just be intentionally creative and entrepreneurial as you go about your week. I look forward to talking to you next week.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.